thinking? Why does a man have to die anyway? The inventor scowled.
It is the way of things, lad. Everything dies but the gods.
But why? The boy insisted. If you can capture the animus, the soul in another form, well, you've told me about your automatons, uncle. Bulls, eagles, dragons, horses of bronze. Why not a bronze form for a man?
No, my boy, Daedalus said sharply. You are naive. Such a thing is impossible.
I don't think so, Perdix insisted. With the use of a little magic?
Magic, bah!
Yes, uncle. Magic and mechanics together, with a little work, one could make a body that would look exactly human, only better. I've made some notes.
He handed the old man a thick scroll. Daedalus unfurled it. He read for a long time. His eyes narrowed. He glanced at the boy, then closed the scroll and cleared his throat.
It would never work, my boy. When you're older, you'll see.
Can I fix that astrolabe then, uncle? Are your joints swelling up again?
The old man's jaw clenched.
No, thank you. Now why don't you run along?
Perdix didn't seem to notice the old man's anger. He snatched a bronze beetle from his mound of stuff and ran to the edge of the tower. A low sill ringed the rim, coming just up to the boy's knees. The wind was strong. Move back, I wanted to tell him, but my voice didn't work. Perdix wound up the beetle and tossed it into the sky. It spread its wings and hummed away. Perdix laughed with delight.
Smarter than me, Daedalus mumbled,
too soft for the boy to hear.
Is it true your son died flying, uncle? I heard you made him enormous wings, but they failed.
Daedalus's hands clenched.
Take my place, he muttered.
The wind whipped around the boy, tugging at his clothes, making his hair ripple.
I would like to fly, Perdix said. I'd make my own wings that wouldn't fail. Do you think I could?
Maybe it was a dream within my dream, but suddenly I imagined the two-headed god Janus shimmering in the air next to Daedalus, smiling as he tossed a silver key from hand to hand. Choose, he whispered to the old inventor. Choose. Daedalus picked up another one of the boy's metal bugs. The inventor's old eyes were red with anger.
Perdix, he called. Catch!
He tossed the bronze beetle toward the boy. Delighted, Perdix tried to catch it, but the throw was too long. The beetle sailed into open sky, and Perdix reached a little too far. The wind caught him. Somehow, he managed to grab the rim of the tower with his fingers as he fell.
Uncle! He screamed. Help me!
The old man's face was a mask. He did not move from his spot.
Go on, Perdix, Daedalus said softly. Make your own wings. Be quick about it.
Uncle!
The boy cried as he lost his grip. He tumbled toward the sea. There was a moment of deadly silence. The god Janus flickered and disappeared. Then thunder shook the sky. A woman's stern voice spoke from above.
You will pay the price for that, Daedalus.
I'd heard that voice before. It was Annabeth's mother, Athena. Daedalus scowled up at the heavens.
I have always honored you, mother. I have sacrificed everything to follow your way.
Yet the boy had my blessing as well, and you have killed him. For that, you must pay.
I've paid and paid, Daedalus growled. I've lost everything. I'll suffer in the underworld, no doubt. But in the meantime,
He picked up the boy's scroll, studied it for a moment, and slipped it into his sleeve.
You do not understand, Athena said coldly. You will pay now and forever.
Suddenly, Daedalus collapsed in agony. I felt what he felt. A searing pain closed around my neck like a molten hot collar, cutting off my breath, making everything go black. I woke in the dark, my hands clutching at my throat.
Percy? Grover called from the other sofa. Are you okay?
I steadied my breathing. I wasn't sure how to answer. I just watched the guy we were looking for, Daedalus, murder his own nephew. How could I be okay? The television was going. Blue light flickered through the room.
What time is it?
I croaked.
2 in the morning, Grover said. I couldn't sleep. I was watching the Nature Channel.
He sniffled.
I miss Juniper.
I rubbed the sleep out of my eyes.
Yeah, well, you'll see her again soon.
Grover shook his head sadly.
Do you know what day it is, Percy? I just saw it on TV. It's June 13th. 7 days since we left camp.
What? I said. That can't be right.
Time is faster in the labyrinth, Grover reminded me. The first time you and Annabeth went down there, you thought you were only gone a few minutes, right? But it was an hour.
Oh, I said. Right. Then it dawned on me what he was saying, and my throat felt searing hot again. Your deadline with the Council of Cloven Elders. Grover put the TV remote in his mouth and crunched off the end of it.
I'm out of time, he said with a mouthful of plastic. As soon as I go back, they'll take away my searcher's license. I'll never be allowed to go out again.
We'll talk to them, I promised. Make them give you more time. Grover swallowed.
They'll never go for it. The world is dying, Percy. Every day it gets worse. The wild... I can just feel it fading. I have to find Pan.
You will, man, no doubt. Grover looked at me with sad goat eyes.
You've always been a good friend, Percy. What you did today, saving the ranch animals from Garion, that was amazing. I wish I could be more like you.
Hey, I said, don't say that. You're just as much a hero.
No, I'm not. I keep trying, but...
He sighed.
Percy, I can't go back to camp without finding Pan. I just can't. You understand that, don't you? I can't face Juniper if I fail. I can't even face myself.
His voice was so unhappy it hurt to hear. We'd been through a lot together, but I'd never heard him sound this down. We'll figure out something, I said. You haven't failed. You're the champion goat boy, all right? Juniper knows that. So do I. Grover closed his eyes.
Champion goat boy, he muttered dejectedly.
A long time after he dozed off, I was still awake, watching the blue light of the Nature Channel wash over the stuffed trophy heads on Garion's walls. The next morning, we walked down to the cattle guard and said our goodbyes. Nico, you could come with us, I blurted out. I guess I was thinking about my dream and how much the young boy Perdix reminded me of Nico. He shook his head. I don't think any of us had slept well in the demon ranch house, but Nico looked worse than anybody else. His eyes were red and his face chalky. He was wrapped in a black robe that must have belonged to Garion, because it was 3 sizes too big, even for a grown man.
I need time to think.
His eyes wouldn't meet mine, but I could tell from his tone he was still angry. The fact that his sister had come out of the underworld for me and not for him didn't seem to sit well with him.
Nico, Annabeth said, Bianca just wants you to be okay.
She put her hand on his shoulder, but he pulled away, and trudged up the road toward the ranch house. Maybe it was my imagination, but the morning mist seemed to cling to him as he walked. "I'm worried about him," Annabeth told me. "If he starts talking to Minos's ghost again..."
"He'll be all right,"
Iridian promised. The cowherd had cleaned up nicely. He was wearing new jeans and a clean western shirt, and he'd even trimmed his beard. He'd put on Garion's boots.
"The boy can stay here and gather his thoughts as long as he wants. He'll be safe, I promise."
"What about you?" I asked. Iridian scratched Orthus behind one chin, then the other.
"Things are gonna be run a little different on this ranch from now on. No more sacred cattle meat. I'm thinking about soybean patties. And I'm gonna befriend those flesh-eating horses. Might just sign up for the next rodeo."
The idea made me shudder. "Well, good luck."
"Yep."
Iridian spit into the grass.
"I reckon you'll be looking for Daedalus's workshop now."
Annabeth's eyes lit up. "Can you help us?" Iridian studied the cattle guard, and I got the feeling the subject of Daedalus's workshop made him uncomfortable.
"Don't know where it is, but Hephaestus probably would."
"That's what Hera said," Annabeth agreed. "But how do we find Hephaestus?" Iridian pulled something from under the collar of his shirt. It was a necklace, a smooth silver disc on a silver chain. The disc had a depression on the middle, like a thumbprint. He handed it to Annabeth.
"Hephaestus comes here from time to time," Iridian said. "Studies the animals and such, so he can make bronze automaton copies. Last time, I, did him a favor. A little trick he wanted to play on my dad, Ares, and Aphrodite. He gave me that chain in gratitude. Said if I ever needed to find him, the disc would lead me to his forges, but only once."
"And you're giving it to me?" Annabeth asked. Iridian blushed.
"I don't need to see the forges, miss. Got enough to do here. Just press the button, and you'll be on your way."
Annabeth pressed the button, and the disc sprang to life. It grew 8 metallic legs. Annabeth shrieked and dropped it, much to Iridian's confusion.
"Spider!" she screamed. "She's, a little scared of spiders," Grover explained. "That old grudge between Athena and Arachne."
"Oh."
Iridian looked embarrassed.
"Sorry, miss."
The spider scrambled to the cattle guard and disappeared between the bars. "Hurry," I said. "That thing's not going to wait for us." Annabeth wasn't anxious to follow, but we didn't have much choice. We said our goodbyes to Iridian, Tyson pulled the cattle guard off the hole, and we dropped back into the maze. I wish I could have put the mechanical spider on a leash. It scuttled along the tunnel so fast, most of the time I couldn't even see it. If it hadn't been for Tyson's and Grover's excellent hearing, we never would have known which way it was going. We ran down a marble tunnel, then dashed to the left and almost fell into an abyss. Tyson grabbed me and hauled me back before I could fall. The tunnel continued in front of us, but there was no floor for about 100 feet, just gaping darkness and a series of iron rungs in the ceiling. The mechanical spider was about halfway across, swinging from bar to bar by shooting out metal web fiber.
"Monkey bars," Annabeth said. "I'm great at these."
She leaped onto the first rung and started swinging her way across. She was scared of tiny spiders, but not of plummeting to her death from a set of monkey bars. Go figure. Annabeth got to the opposite side and ran after the spider. I followed. When I got across, I looked back and saw Tyson giving Grover a piggyback ride. Or was it a goatyback ride? The big guy made it across in 3 swings, which was a good thing since, just as he landed, the last iron bar ripped free under his weight. We kept moving and passed the skeleton crumpled in the tunnel. It wore the remains of a dress shirt, slacks, and a tie. The spider didn't slow down. I slipped on a pile of wood scraps, but when I shined a light on them, I realized they were pencils, hundreds of them, all broken in half. The tunnel opened up into a large room. A blazing light hit us. Once my eyes adjusted, the first thing I noticed were the skeletons. Dozens littered the floor around us. Some were old and bleached white. Others were more recent and a lot grosser. They didn't smell quite as bad as Garion's stables, but almost. Then I saw the monster. She stood on a glittery dais on the opposite side of the room. She had the body of a huge lion and the head of a woman. She would have been pretty, but her hair was tied back in a tight bun, and she wore too much makeup. So she kind of reminded me of my third-grade choir teacher. She had a blue ribbon badge pinned to her chest that took me a moment to read. "This monster has been rated exemplary." Tyson whimpered.
"Sphinx!"
I knew exactly why he was scared. When he was small, Tyson had been attacked by a sphinx in New York. He still had the scars on his back to prove it. Spotlights blazed on either side of the creature. The only exit was a tunnel right behind the dais. The mechanical spider scuttled between the sphinx's paws and disappeared. Annabeth started forward, but the sphinx roared, showing fangs in her otherwise human face. Bars came down on both tunnel exits, behind us and in front. Immediately, the monster's snarl turned into a brilliant smile. "Welcome, lucky contestants," she announced. "Get ready to play Answer That Riddle." Canned applause blasted from the ceiling, as if there were invisible loudspeakers. Spotlights swept across the room and reflected off the dais, throwing disco glitter over the skeletons on the floor. "Fabulous prizes," the sphinx said. "Pass the test and you'll get to advance. Fail and I get to eat you. Who will be our contestant?" Annabeth grabbed my arm. "I've got this," she whispered. "I know what she's going to ask." I didn't argue too hard. I didn't want Annabeth getting devoured by a monster, but I figured if the sphinx was going to ask riddles, Annabeth was the best one of us to try. She stepped forward into the contestant's podium, which had a skeleton in a school uniform hunched over it. She pushed the skeleton out of the way, and it clattered to the floor. "Sorry," Annabeth told it. "Welcome, Annabeth Chase," the monster cried, though Annabeth hadn't said her name. "Are you ready for your test?"
Yes, she said. "Ask your riddle."
20 riddles, actually," the sphinx said gleefully.
"What? But back in the old days? Oh, we've raised our standards. To pass, you must show proficiency in all 20. Isn't that great?"
Applause switched on and off like somebody turning a faucet. Annabeth glanced at me nervously. I gave her an encouraging nod.
"Okay," she told the sphinx. "I'm ready."
A drum roll sounded from above. The sphinx's eyes glittered with excitement.
"What is the capital of Bulgaria?"
Annabeth frowned. For a terrible moment, I thought she was stumped.
"Sofia," she said, "but correct."
More canned applause. The sphinx smiled so wide her fang showed.
"Please be sure to mark your answer clearly on your test sheet with a number 2 pencil."
"What?" Annabeth looked mystified. Then a test booklet appeared on the podium in front of her, along with a sharpened pencil.
"Make sure you bubble each answer clearly and stay inside the circle," the sphinx said. "If you have to erase, erase completely, or the machine will not be able to read your answers."
"What machine?" Annabeth asked. The sphinx pointed with her paw. Over by the spotlight was a bronze box with a bunch of gears and levers and a big Greek letter, Eta, on the side, the mark of Hephaestus. "Now," said the Sphinx. "Next question." "Wait a second," Annabeth protested. "What about what walks on four legs in the morning?" "I beg your pardon," the Sphinx said, clearly annoyed now. "The riddle about man. He walks on four legs in the morning like a baby, two legs in the afternoon like an adult, and three legs in the evening as an old man with a cane. That's the riddle you used to ask." "Exactly why we changed the test," the Sphinx exclaimed. "You already knew the answer. Now, second question, what is the square root of 16?
4,
Annabeth said, but...
"Correct."
"Which U.S. president signed the Emancipation Proclamation?"
"Abraham Lincoln, but..."
"Correct."
"Riddle number 4, how much..."
"Hold up," Annabeth shouted. I wanted to tell her to stop complaining. She was doing great. She should just answer the questions so we could leave.
"These aren't riddles," Annabeth said.
"What do you mean?" the Sphinx snapped.
"Of course they are. This test material is specially designed. It's just a bunch of dumb random facts," Annabeth insisted.
"Riddles are supposed to make you think."
"Think?" the Sphinx frowned. "How am I supposed to test whether you can think? That's ridiculous. Now how much force is required?"
"Stop," Annabeth insisted. "This is a stupid test."
Annabeth, Grover cut in nervously. "Maybe you should just, you know, finish first and complain later."
"I'm a child of Athena," she insisted, "and this is an insult to my intelligence. I won't answer these questions."
Part of me was impressed with her for standing up like that, but part of me thought her pride was going to get us all killed. The spotlights glared. The Sphinx's eyes glittered pure black.
"Why then, my dear,"
the monster said calmly, "if you won't pass, you fail. And since we can't allow any children to be held back, you'll be eaten." The Sphinx bared her claws, which gleamed like stainless steel. She pounced at the podium.
"No!"
Tyson charged. He hates it when people threaten Annabeth. But I couldn't believe he was being so brave, especially since he'd had such a bad experience with a Sphinx before. He tackled the Sphinx midair, and they crashed sideways into a pile of bones. This gave Annabeth just enough time to gather her wits and draw her knife. Tyson got up, his shirt clawed to shreds. The Sphinx growled, looking for an opening. I drew Riptide and stepped in front of Annabeth. "Turn invisible," I told her.
"I can fight."
"No," I yelled. "The Sphinx is after you. Let us get it." As if to prove my point, the Sphinx knocked Tyson aside and tried to charge past me. Grover poked her in the eye with somebody's leg bone. She screeched in pain. Annabeth put her cap on and vanished. The Sphinx pounced right where she'd been standing, but came up with empty paws.
"No fair," the Sphinx wailed. "Cheater!"
With Annabeth no longer in sight, the Sphinx turned on me. I raised my sword, but before I could strike, Tyson ripped the monster's grating machine out of the floor and threw it at the Sphinx's head, ruining her hair bun. It landed in pieces all around her.
"My grating machine," she cried. "I can't be exemplary without my test scores."
The bars lifted from the exits. We all dashed for the far tunnel. I could only hope Annabeth was doing the same. The Sphinx started to follow, but Grover raised his reed pipes and began to play. Suddenly, the pencils remembered they used to be parts of trees. They collected around the Sphinx's paws, grew roots and branches, and began wrapping around the monster's legs. The Sphinx ripped through them, but it bought us just enough time. Tyson pulled Grover into the tunnel, and the bars slammed shut behind us.
"Annabeth!"
I yelled.
"Here,"
she said, right next to me.
Keep moving.
We ran through the dark tunnels, listening to the roar of the Sphinx behind us as she complained about all the tests she would have to grade by hand. Chapter 11. I set myself on fire. I thought we'd lost the spider until Tyson heard a faint pinging sound. We made a few turns, backtracked a few times, and eventually found the spider banging its tiny head on a metal door. The door looked like one of those old-fashioned submarine hatches, oval, with metal rivets around the edges and a wheel for a doorknob. Where the portal should have been was a big brass plaque, green with age, with a Greek Ada inscribed in the middle. We all looked at each other.
"Ready to meet Hephaestus?" Grover said nervously.
"No," I admitted.
"Yes,"
Tyson said gleefully, and he turned the wheel. As soon as the door opened, the spider scuttled inside with Tyson right behind it. The rest of us followed, not quite as anxious. The room was enormous. It looked like a mechanic's garage, with several hydraulic lifts. Some had cars on them, but others had stranger things. A bronze Hippolectrion with its horse head off, and a bunch of wires hanging out of its rooster tail. A metal lion that seemed to be hooked up to a battery charger, and a Greek war chariot made entirely of flames. Smaller projects cluttered a dozen work tables. Tools hung along the walls. Each had its own outline on a pegboard, but nothing seemed to be in the right place. The hammer was over the screwdriver place. The staple gun was where the hacksaw was supposed to go. Under the nearest hydraulic lift, which was holding a 98 Toyota Corolla, a pair of legs stuck out. The lower half of a huge man in grubby gray pants and shoes even bigger than Tyson's. One leg was in a metal brace. The spider scuttled straight under the car, and the sounds of banging stopped.
"Well, well," a deep voice boomed from under the Corolla. "What have we here?"
The mechanic pushed out on a back trolley and sat up. I'd seen Hephaestus once before, briefly on Olympus, so I thought I was prepared, but his appearance made me gulp. I guess he'd cleaned up when I saw him on Olympus, or used magic to make his form seem a little less hideous. Here, in his own workshop, he apparently didn't care how he looked. He wore a jumpsuit smeared with oil and grime. Hephaestus was embroidered over the chest pocket. His leg creaked and clicked in its metal brace as he stood, and his left shoulder was lower than his right, so he seemed to be leaning, even when he was standing up straight. His head was misshapen and bulging. He wore a permanent scowl. His black beard smoked and hissed. Every once in a while, a small wildfire would erupt in his whiskers, then die out. His hands were the size of catcher's mitts, but he handled the spider with amazing skill. He disassembled it in 2 seconds, then put it back together.
"There," he muttered to himself. "Much better."
The spider did a happy flip in his palm, shot a metallic web at the ceiling, and went swinging away. Hephaestus glowered up at us.
"I didn't make you, did I?"
Annabeth said. "No, sir."
"Good," the god grumbled. "Shoddy workmanship."
He studied Annabeth and me.
"Half-bloods," he grunted. "Could be automatons, of course, but probably not."
"We've met, sir," I told him.
"Have we?"
the god asked absently. I got the feeling he didn't care one way or the other. He was just trying to figure out how my jaw worked, whether it was a hinge or lever or what.
"Well, then, if I didn't smash you to a pulp the first time we met, I suppose I won't have to do it now."
He looked at Grover and frowned.
"Seda."
Then he looked at Tyson, and his eyes twinkled.
"Well, a cyclops. Good, good. What are you doing traveling with this lot?"
Said Tyson, staring in wonder at the god.
Yes, well said, Hephaestus agreed. So, there better be a good reason you're disturbing me. The suspension on this Corolla is no small matter, you know.
Sir, Annabeth said hesitantly, we're looking for Daedalus. We thought...
Daedalus?
The god roared.
You want that old scoundrel? You dare seek him out?
His beard burst into flames, and his black eyes glowed.
Yes, sir, please, Annabeth said.
Huh, you're wasting your time.
He frowned at something on his work table and limped over to it. He picked up a lump of springs and metal plates and tinkered with them. In a few seconds, he was holding a bronze and silver falcon. It spread its metal wings, blinked its obsidian eyes, and flew around the room. Tyson laughed and clapped his hands. The bird landed on Tyson's shoulder and nipped his ear affectionately. Hephaestus regarded him. The god's scowl didn't change, but I thought I saw a kinder twinkle in his eyes.
I sense you have something to tell me, Cyclops.
Tyson's smile faded.
Yes, Lord. We met a hundred-handed one.
Hephaestus nodded, looking unsurprised.
Briares?
Yes, he was scared. He would not help us.
And that bothered you?
Yes.
Tyson's voice wavered.
Briares should be strong. He is older and greater than Cyclopes, but he ran away.
Hephaestus grunted.
There was a time I admired the hundred-handed ones, back in the days of the First War. But people, monsters, even gods change, young Cyclops. You can't trust them. Look at my loving mother, Hera. You met her, didn't you? She'll smile to your face and talk how important family is, huh? Didn't stop her from pitching me off Mount Olympus when she saw my ugly face.
But I thought Zeus did that to you, I said. Hephaestus cleared his throat and spat into a bronze spittoon. He snapped his fingers, and the robotic falcon flew back to the work table.
Mother likes telling that version of the story, he grumbled. Makes her seem more likable, doesn't it? Blaming it all on my dad. The truth is, my mother likes families, but she likes a certain kind of family. Perfect families. She took one look at me, and, well, I don't fit the image, do I?
He pulled a feather from the falcon's back, and the whole automaton fell apart.
Believe me, young Cyclops, Hephaestus said. You can't trust others. All you can trust is the work of your own hands.
It seemed like a pretty lonely way to live. Plus, I didn't exactly trust the work of Hephaestus. One time in Denver, his mechanical spiders had almost killed Annabeth and me. And last year, it had been a defective Talus statue that cost Bianca her life. Another one of Hephaestus's little projects. He focused on me and narrowed his eyes, as if he were reading my thoughts.
Oh, this one doesn't like me, he mused. No worries, I'm used to that. What would you ask of me, little demigod?
We told you, I said. We need to find Daedalus. There's this guy Luke, and he's working for Kronos. He's trying to find a way to navigate the labyrinth so we can invade our camp. If we don't get to Daedalus first...
And I told you, boy, looking for Daedalus is a waste of time. He won't help you.
Why not?
Hephaestus shrugged. Some of us get thrown off mountainsides. Some of us... The way we learn not to trust people is even more painful. Ask me for gold, or a flaming sword, or magical steed. These I can grant you easily. But a way to Daedalus, that's an expensive favor.
You know where he is, then? Annabeth pressed.
It isn't wise to go looking, girl.
My mother says, Looking is the nature of wisdom. Hephaestus narrowed his eyes.
Who's your mother, then?
Athena?
Figures, he sighed. Fine goddess, Athena. A shame she pledged never to marry. All right, Half-Blood, I can tell you what you want to know, but there's a price. I need a favor done.
Name it, Annabeth said. Hephaestus actually laughed, a booming sound like a huge bellows stoking a fire.
You heroes, he said, always making rash promises. How refreshing.
He pressed a button on his workbench, and metal shutters opened along the wall. It was either a huge window or a big screen TV. I couldn't tell which. We were looking at a gray mountain ringed in forests. It must have been a volcano, because smoke rose from its crest.
One of my forges, Hephaestus said. I have many, but that used to be my favorite.
That's Mount St. Helens, Grover said. Great forests around there.
You've been there? I asked.
Looking for, you know, Pan.
Wait, Annabeth said, looking at Hephaestus. You said it used to be your favorite. What happened? Hephaestus scratched his smoldering beard.
Well, that's where the monster Typhon is trapped, you know. Used to be under Mount Etna. But when we moved to America, his force got pinned under Mount St. Helens instead. Great source of fire, but a bit dangerous. There's always a chance he will escape. Lots of eruptions these days, smoldering all the time. He's restless with the Titan Rebellion.
What do you want us to do? I said. Fight him? Hephaestus snorted.
That would be suicide. The gods themselves ran from Typhon when he was free. Nah, pray you never have to see him, much less fight him. But lately, I have sensed intruders in my mountain. Someone or something is using my forges. When I go there, it's empty, but I could tell it's being used. They sense me coming and they disappear. I send my automatons to investigate, but they do not return. Something ancient is there, evil. I want to know who dares invade my territory, and if they mean to loose Typhon.
You want us to find out who it is, I said.
Aye, Hephaestus said. Go there. They might not sense you coming. You're not gods.
Glad you noticed, I muttered.
Go and find out what you can, Hephaestus said. Report back to me, and I will tell you what you need to know about Daedalus.
All right, Annabeth said. How do we get there? Hephaestus clapped his hands. The spider came swinging down from the rafters. Annabeth flinched when it landed at her feet.
My creation will show you the way, Hephaestus said. It is not far through the labyrinth. And try to stay alive, will you? Humans are much more fragile than automatons.
We were doing okay until we hit the tree roots. The spider raced along, and we were keeping up. But then we spotted a tunnel off to the side that was dug from raw earth and wrapped in thick roots. Grover stopped dead in his tracks. What is it? I said. He didn't move. He stared open-mouthed into the dark tunnel. His curly hair rustled in the breeze.
Come on, Annabeth said. We have to keep moving. This is the way, Grover muttered in awe. This is it.
What way? I asked.
You mean to Pan?
Grover looked at Tyson.
Don't you smell it?
Dirt, Tyson said. And plants.
Yes, this is the way. I'm sure of it.
Up ahead, the spider was getting farther down the stone corridor. A few more seconds and we'd lose it.
We'll come back, Annabeth promised. On our way back to Hephaestus. The tunnel will be gone by then, Grover said. I have to follow it. A door like this won't stay open.
But we can't, Annabeth said. The forges. Grover looked at her sadly.
I have to, Annabeth. Don't you understand?
She looked desperate, like she didn't understand at all. The spider was almost out of sight, but I thought about my conversation with Grover last night, and I knew what we had to do.
We'll split up, I said.
No, Annabeth said. That's way too dangerous. How will we ever find each other again? And Grover can't go alone.
Tyson put his hand on Grover's shoulder.
I will go with him.
I couldn't believe I was hearing this. Tyson, are you sure? The big guy nodded.
Goat Boy needs help. We will find the God person. I am not like Hephaestus. I trust friends.
Grover took a deep breath.
Percy, we'll find each other again. We've still got the empathy link. I just have to.
I didn't blame him. This was his life's goal. If he didn't find Pan on this journey, the council would never give him another chance.
I hope you're right, I said. I know I am.
I'd never heard him sound so confident about anything, except maybe that cheese enchiladas were better than chicken enchiladas.
Be careful, I told him. Then I looked at Tyson. He gulped back a sob and then gave me a hug that just about squeezed my eyes out of their sockets.
Then he and Grover disappeared through the tunnel of tree roots and were lost in the darkness.
This is bad, Annabeth said. Splitting up is a really, really bad idea.
We'll see them again, I said,
trying to sound confident.
Now come on. The spider is getting away.
It wasn't long before the tunnel started to get hot. The stone walls glowed. The air felt as if we were walking through an oven. The tunnel sloped down, and I could hear a loud roar, like a river of metal. The spider skittered along, with Annabeth right behind.
Hey, wait up,
I called to her. She glanced back at me.
Yeah?
Something Hephaestus said back there? About Athena?
She swore never to marry, Annabeth said.
Like Artemis and Hestia. She's one of the maiden goddesses.
I blinked. I'd never heard that about Athena before.
But then, how come she has demigod children?
I nodded. I was probably blushing, but hopefully it was so hot anyway that Annabeth didn't notice.
Percy, you know how Athena was born?
She sprung from the head of Zeus in full battle armor or something.
Exactly. She wasn't born in the normal way. She was literally born from thoughts. Her children are born the same way. When Athena falls in love with a mortal man, it's purely intellectual. The way she loved Odysseus in the old stories. It's a meeting of minds. She would tell you that's the purest kind of love.
So, your dad and Athena, so you weren't...
I was a brainchild, Annabeth said. Literally. Children of Athena are sprung from the divine thoughts of our mother and the mortal ingenuity of our father. We're supposed to be a gift, a blessing from Athena on the men she favors.
But...
Percy, the spider is getting away. Do you really want me to explain the exact details of how I was born?
No, that's okay.
She smirked.
I thought not.
And she ran ahead. I followed, but I wasn't sure I would ever look at Annabeth the same way again. I decided some things were better left as mysteries. The roaring got louder. After another half mile or so, we emerged in a cavern the size of a Super Bowl stadium. Our spider escort stopped and curled into a ball. We had arrived at the forge of Hephaestus. There was no floor, just bubbling lava hundreds of feet below. We stood on a rock ridge that circled the cavern. A network of metal bridges spanned across it. At the center was a huge platform with all sorts of machines, cauldrons, forges, and the largest anvil I'd ever seen. A block of iron the size of a house. Creatures moved around the platform, several strange dark shapes, but they were too far away to make out details.
"We'll never be able to sneak up on them," I said.
Annabeth picked up the metal spider and slipped it into her pocket.
"I can. Wait here."
"Hold it," I said, but before I could argue, she put on her Yankees cap and turned invisible. I didn't dare call after her, but I didn't like the idea of her approaching the forge on her own. If those things out there could sense a god coming, would Annabeth be safe? I looked back at the labyrinth tunnel. I missed Grover and Tyson already. Finally, I decided I couldn't stay put. I crept along the outer rim of the lava lake, hoping I could get a better angle to see what was happening in the middle. The heat was horrible. Garion's ranch had been a winter wonderland compared to this. In no time, I was drenched with sweat, my eyes stung from the smoke. I moved along, trying to keep away from the edge, until I found my way blocked by a cart on metal wheels, like the kind they use in mine shafts. I lifted up the tarp and found it was half full of scrap metal. I was about to squeeze my way around it when I heard voices from up ahead, probably from a side tunnel.
"Bring it in?" one asked.
"Yeah,"
another said.
"Movie's just about done."
I panicked. I didn't have time to back up. There was nowhere to hide except the cart. I scrambled inside and pulled the tarp over me, hoping no one had seen me. I curled my fingers around Riptide, just in case I had to fight. The cart lurched forward.
"Oi,"
a gruff voice said.
"Thing weighs a ton."
"It's celestial bronze," the other said. "What did you expect?"
I got pulled along. We turned a corner, and from the sound of the wheels echoing against the walls, I guessed we had passed down a tunnel and into a smaller room. Hopefully, I was not about to be dumped into a smelting pot. If they started to tip me over, I'd have to fight my way out quick. I heard lots of talking, chattering voices that didn't sound human, somewhere between a seal's bark and a dog's growl. There were other sounds, too, like an old-fashioned film projector and a tinny voice narrating.
"Just set it in the back,"
a new voice ordered from across the room.
"Now, younglings, please attend to the film. There will be time for questions afterward."
The voices quieted down, and I could hear the film.
"As a young sea demon matures," the narrator said, "changes happen in the monster's body. You may notice your fangs getting longer, and you may have a sudden desire to devour human beings. These changes are perfectly normal and happen to all young monsters."
Excited snarling filled the room. The teacher, I guess it must have been a teacher, told the younglings to get quiet, and the film continued. I didn't understand most of it, and I didn't dare look. The film kept talking about growth spurts and acne problems caused by working in the forges, and proper flipper hygiene, and finally it was over.
"Now, younglings," the instructor said, "what is the proper name of our kind?"
"Sea demons,"
one of them barked.
"No, anyone else?"
"Telekines,"
another monster growled.
"Very good," the instructor said. "And why are we here?"
"Revenge,"
several shouted.
"Yes, yes, but why?"
"Zeus is evil,"
one monster said.
"He cast us into Tartarus just because we use magic."
"Indeed," the instructor said. "After we made so many of the gods' finest weapons, the trident of Poseidon for one, and of course, we made the greatest weapon of the Titans. Nevertheless, Zeus cast us away and relied on those fumbling Cyclopes. That is why we are taking over the forges of the usurper Hephaestus. And soon we will control the undersea furnaces, our ancestral home.
I clutched my pen sword. These snarling things had created Poseidon's trident? What were they talking about? I'd never even heard of a telekine.
And so, younglings, the instructor continued, who do we serve?
Kronos,
they shouted.
And when you grow to be big telekines, will you make weapons for his army?
Yes!
Excellent! Now, we've brought in some scraps for you to practice with. Let's see how ingenious you are.
There was a rush of movement and excited voices coming toward the cart. I got ready to uncap Riptide. The tarp was thrown back. I jumped up, my bronze sword springing to life in my hands, and found myself facing a bunch of dogs. Well, their faces were dogs anyway, with black snouts, brown eyes, and pointy ears. Their bodies were sleek and black like sea mammals, with stubby legs that were half flipper, half foot, and human-like hands with sharp claws. If you blended together a kid, a Doberman Pinscher, and a sea lion, you'd get something like what I was looking at.
A demigod,
one snarled.
Eat it,
yelled another. But that's as far as they got before I slashed a wide arc with Riptide and vaporized the entire front row of monsters. Back off, I yelled at the rest, trying to sound fierce. Behind them stood their instructor, a 6-foot-tall telekine with Doberman fangs snarling at me. I did my best to stare him down. New lesson, class, I announced. Most monsters will vaporize when sliced with a celestial bronze sword. This change is perfectly normal and will happen to you right now if you don't back off. To my surprise, it worked. The monsters backed up, but there were at least 20 of them. My fear factor wasn't going to last long. I jumped out of the cart, yelled, "Class dismissed!" and ran for the exit. The monsters charged after me, barking and growling. I hoped they couldn't run very fast with those stubby little legs and flippers, but they waddled along pretty well. Thank the gods there was a door in the tunnel leading out to the main cavern. I slammed it shut and turned the wheel handle to lock it, but I doubted it would keep them long. I didn't know what to do. Annabeth was out here somewhere, invisible. Our chance for a subtle reconnaissance mission had just been blown. I ran toward the platform at the center of the lava lake.
Annabeth!
I yelled.
Shh!
An invisible hand clamped over my mouth and wrestled me down behind a big bronze cauldron.
You want to get us killed?
I found her head and took off her Yankees cap. She shimmered into existence in front of me, scowling, her face streaked with ash and grime.
Percy, what's your problem?
We're going to have company. I explained quickly about the monster orientation class. Her eyes widened.
So that's what they are, she said. Telekines. I should have known. And they're making, well, look.
We peeked over the cauldron. In the center of the platform stood 4 sea demons, but these were fully grown, at least 8 feet tall. Their black skin glistened in the firelight as they worked, sparks flying as they took turns hammering on a long piece of glowing hot metal.
"The blade is almost complete," one said. "It needs another cooling in blood to fuse the metals."
"Aye,"
a second said.
"It shall be even sharper than before."
"What is that?"
I whispered. Annabeth shook her head. They keep talking about fusing metals. I wonder...
They were talking about the greatest Titan weapon, I said. And they said they made my father's trident.
The Telekines betrayed the gods, Annabeth said. They were practicing dark magic. I don't know what, exactly, but Zeus banished them to Tartarus.
With Kronos, she nodded. We have to get out.
No sooner had she said that than the door to the classroom exploded, and young Telekines came pouring out. They stumbled over each other, trying to figure out which way to charge.
Put your cap back on, I said. Get out!
What?
Annabeth shrieked. No, I'm not leaving you. I've got a plan. I'll distract them. You can use the metal spider. Maybe it'll lead you back to Hephaestus. You have to tell him what's going on.
But you'll be killed.
I'll be fine. Besides, we've got no choice.
Annabeth glared at me like she was going to punch me. And then she did something that surprised me even more. She kissed me.
Be careful, seaweed brain.
She put on her hat and vanished. I probably would have sat there for the rest of the day, staring at the lava and trying to remember what my name was, but the sea demons jarred me back to reality.
Zer!
One yelled. The entire class of Telekines charged across the bridge toward me. I ran for the middle of the platform, surprising the four elder sea demons so much they dropped the red-hot blade. It was about 6 feet long and curved like a crescent moon. I'd seen a lot of terrifying things, but this unfinished whatever it was scared me worse. The elder demons got over their surprise quickly. There were four ramps leading off the platform, and before I could dash in any direction, each of them had covered an exit. The tallest one snarled.
What do we have here? A son of Poseidon? Yes, another growled. I can smell the sea in his blood.
I raised Riptide. My heart was pounding.
Strike down one of us, demigod, the third demon said, and the rest of us shall tear you to shreds. Your father betrayed us. He took our gift and said nothing as we were cast into the pit. We will see him sliced to pieces, he and all the other Olympians.
I wished I had a plan. I wished I hadn't been lying to Annabeth. I'd wanted her to get out safely, and I hoped she'd been sensible enough to do it. But now it was dawning on me that this might be the place I would die. No prophecies for me. I would get overrun in the heart of a volcano by a pack of dog-faced sea lion people. The young Telekines were at the platform now, too, snarling and waiting to see how their four elders would deal with me. I felt something burning against the side of my leg. The ice whistle in my pocket was getting colder. If I ever needed help, now was the time. But I hesitated. I didn't trust Quintus's gift. Before I could make up my mind, the tallest Telekines said,
Let us see how strong he is. Let us see how long it takes him to burn.
He scooped some lava out of the nearest furnace. It set his fingers ablaze, but this didn't seem to bother him at all. The other elder Telekines did the same. The first one threw a glop of molten rock at me and set my pants on fire. Two more splattered across my chest. I dropped my sword in sheer terror and swatted at my clothes. Fire was engulfing me. Strangely, it felt only warm at first, but it was getting hotter by the instant.
Your father's nature protects you, one said. Makes you hard to burn, but not impossible, youngling, not impossible.
They threw more lava at me, and I remember screaming. My whole body was on fire. The pain was worse than anything I'd ever felt. I was being consumed. I crumpled to the metal floor and heard the sea demon children howling in delight. Then I remembered the voice of the River Naiad at the ranch. The water is within me. I needed the sea. I felt a tugging sensation in my gut, but I had nothing around to help me. Not a faucet or a river, not even a petrified seashell this time. And besides, the last time I'd unleashed my power at the stables, there'd been that scary moment when it had almost gotten away from me. I had no choice.